Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Mark Fairchild, on the evidence that the Apostle Paul was possibly a slave.
Well, if we look at just raw statistics, the vast bulk of the people who are not Roman, who have acquired Roman citizenship, were former slaves.
Mark Fairchild, next. According to retired Bible and religion professor Dr. Mark Fairchild, evidence indicates that the Apostle Paul grew up a slave. He documents this in his book, Paul's Enslavement. Fairchild said the idea for the book began a decade ago after encountering a passage in the writings of early church historian and theologian Jerome, which implied Paul had been enslaved. Here's Spencer Dahlke.
What sparked your interest in Paul's possible enslavement and considering that there's not a lot of direct evidence to suggest that he was? How did you start theorizing that maybe he was?
Well, you know, reading scripture, there are tantalizing clues that you're wondering, you know, let's investigate this a little bit. Where does it lead us? So you can start out with Paul's name. Paul's name was Saul, a Jewish name, very common Jewish name. But yet he had acquired a Roman name, Paulus, again, a common Roman name. And so when Paul in the Acts of the Apostles is with Jewish people, the early chapters of Acts, he goes by Saul. But when he starts doing his missionary journeys, he's working with Greeks and Romans, others, he uses this name, Paul. So where does that come from? Another issue is we read that Paul was a Roman citizen. How is it that a Jew would acquire Roman citizenship? Well, if we look at just raw statistics, the vast bulk of the people who are not Roman, who have acquired Roman citizenship, were former slaves who were manumitted, freed, and adopted by their former families. Now, when it comes to slavery, slavery was ubiquitous. It was very, very common 2,000 years ago. Estimates vary because we don't know precisely, but probably in the neighborhood of 15% of the Roman population, the Mediterranean population. In fact, if we go to certain cities, the numbers are probably much higher than that. Scholars say that at Corinth, perhaps a third of the population was slave. If we go to Rome, the percentage of the population was probably much higher as well. So it's very common. And slavery was not terminal. It's not like once a slave, you're always going to be a slave. Typically speaking, after 20 years, sometimes less, sometimes more, a slave would be freed, what we call manumitted. If his master liked the slave, maybe a good worker, got along well with them, they would maintain a relationship quite often with their former master. So they would continue to be employed, and many times they would be adopted into their master's family. And that's probably what happened with Paul. That's how he acquired his Roman name, Paul, or Paulus, and would acquire Roman citizenship because once being adopted into the family of his owner, he would be given Roman citizenship. Then as we continue to read a little bit further, in Acts chapter 6, we read that the apostles appointed 7 deacons to help them with the ministerial activities going on in Jerusalem. One of those persons, Stephen, begins proclaiming the gospel. And he is opposed by people who come from the synagogue of the freedmen, people who formerly were slaves that had been freed. So these are Jews in a synagogue who formulated a synagogue who were former slaves. And among those are people from Cilicia. Paul came from Cilicia, came from the foremost city in Cilicia called Tarsus. So that kind of is interesting. Later on, we discover that Stephen is dragged before the Sanhedrin. He's condemned, taken outside of the city, and stoned. The first time we read about this guy, Saul, is they lay the robes at the feet of a young man named Saul. But why does Luke, the author of Acts, include such a peculiar detail? Because Paul, or Saul, was the one who was responsible for bringing Stephen before the Sanhedrin. So we have a connection there. Saul, Paul, was a part of the synagogue of the freedmen. Well, that turns on some lights there. Wow, could Paul have actually been a former slave who was freed? Now, in early church writings, we have many, many early church writings, okay, and they comment on the scriptures. We have a early church father, a fellow by the name of Jerome, who is a theologian and historian, who lived the latter part of his life in Bethlehem, the birthplace of Jesus. And so he had access to a lot of traditions, oral traditions, written traditions that we don't have today, okay? And he tells us that Paul's family originally came from Gischala. Gischala is a town in northern Galilee. And he tells us that they were moved, taken from Gischala, and put into Tarsus. And he also says this is how Paul acquired his status. Well, what's his status? Status is a Roman citizen. So again, we're starting to connect dots. We're putting puzzle pieces on the table. And the more pieces that we put together, a bigger, broader picture emerges. We put that together with what we know of Josephus. He's the Roman historian, gives us a lot of information on what's happening in the latter decades of the first century BC and the early decades AD. He tells us that many of the cities and towns, the villages in Galilee, were rising up in rebellion against the Romans. The Romans had come in and had seized Palestine. The Jews didn't like it. So many of them, especially in Galilee, rose up against the Romans. What the Romans would do then is they would bring in the legions, they would sack these cities, sell off the residents on the Roman slave markets. And so we're putting together what Josephus tells us with what Jerome tells us. So that's some of the detail that initially brought me to investigate a little more deeply. But then reading scripture even further, Paul, in his own writings, drops a lot of clues, a lot of hints. For instance, at the very end of his letter to the Galatians, he makes this statement, "I bear on my body the brand marks of Jesus." What does that mean? The Greek word that is used there is the word stigmata. And if we look that up into a Greek dictionary, what's called a concordance, the stigmata was a mark of slavery. It could be a brand, like you'd brand cattle. It's very harsh. But more commonly what it was is a tattoo. Jews would not be tattooed. They would not deface their own bodies. But if they were a slave, they didn't have any choice. And so when Paul makes this statement, "I bear on my body the stigma of Jesus Christ," he had a physical mark on his body, a mark of ownership from his former master. And now what he does, Paul uses this expression many times. How many times does Paul in his letters refer to himself as the slave of Christ? Paul now does is he's transferred his former slavery, which was involuntary, but now voluntarily, he's become the slave, the servant of Jesus Christ.
That's a really, really good summary for sure. I'll come back to ask a little bit more about these. But first, one question I did kind of want to ask, as I was looking at your book, it looked like it's an interesting study. But one thing I know I certainly like to know is, why does it matter? As you were studying Paul's life, theorizing that maybe he was a slave, how does that help us understand Paul's writing better? And maybe you even have thoughts about why it matters that Paul was a slave.
All of us are conditioned by our past. We cannot escape from our past. We think from our past. That creates a worldview. And the way we speak, for that matter, is inescapable. We speak from what we've experienced from the past. And so if we look at Paul's writings, he has an inordinate preference for using slave terminology. So if we actually do a statistical study, Paul uses slave terminology more than twice as much as the rest of the New Testament. So terms like slaves, freedom, adoption, these are terms that Paul uses much more than anybody else in the New Testament. So you have to ask the question, why is it that Paul is speaking from this perspective? I think the statistics alone indicate that he had some kind of a connection with slavery. He could have been a slave owner, perhaps. I doubt that. But it's because he personally experienced it. And so he thinks in that manner as he writes his letters. Now, the other question is, why does it really even matter? Well, it's because I think it's telling us something that's really important, that regardless of where we came from, God can use us in extraordinary ways. Slaves occupied the very lowest echelons of society. You couldn't go any lower. Slaves were considered to be living property. As a matter of fact, some of the ancient Roman sources described slaves in such a manner. Couldn't get any lower. And that's where Paul started. But he simply, you know, served God. He was a zealot. That's part of what I describe in the book. A zealot is a person who is an extraordinary servant of God. And as a Jewish zealot, they would do anything to protect the sanctity of the Torah, that is the sacred scriptures. And of course, when the Romans came into the land, these zealots felt like it was their obligation to overthrow the Romans to establish the kingdom of God. Okay, the Jews were looking for this coming kingdom of God. And of course, they were willing to shed blood in order to remove the Romans. Once Paul was taken into slavery, his zealotry shifted. He realized that the Romans weren't the problem. The Romans were fair. The Romans were just. And this accounts for how it is that Paul, when writing to the Romans, what does he say in Romans chapter 13? He describes Roman governing officials as servants of God. So his zealotry changes. He's no longer a zealot willing to shed Roman blood and to kill Roman troops. Now he perceives Christians to be the problem because they are the ones who are now desecrating Torah, that is, the sacred scriptures. And that accounts for why it is that Paul is attacking, killing, dragging people like Stephen and others before authorities to have them executed. In fact, this is what Paul tells us. He describes in Acts how he was an extraordinary zealot, and that's the reason why he was doing what he was doing to the Christians. However, the Damascus Road changes everything. He realizes that it's all true. But Paul continued to be a zealot. His zealotry never stops. Now the zealotry is internalized. Instead of willing to shed the blood of others, he's willing to shed his own blood in behalf of the cause of Christ. He's still a zealot. And that's what he shares with us, you know, in Galatians chapter 1, verse 14. He's describing his past. He says, I was advancing in Judaism beyond many of my contemporaries, being an extraordinary zealot for my ancestral traditions. He himself is describing himself as a zealot. And of course, we can turn to Josephus for his definition. What was a zealot? A zealot was a person who is willing to shed blood in order to serve God.
I'm given to understand that this book you've written is described as the first detailed study on Paul's enslavement. I'm curious, what gaps in existing scholarship on Paul did you aim to fill? And what challenges did you face piecing together all this historical evidence that you describe as like trying to study a black hole where there's just like an absence of evidence and trying to put it together?
Yeah, to be fair, I'm not the only person who's even insinuated or suggested or thrown this out as a possibility. You know, one of the things that as I started doing some of my research, Roman Catholic scholar Jerome Murphy O'Connor wrote a book on Paul. He had suggested that this may be the case. And when you think about it, even in a broader context, I just shared with you that, you know, 15%, maybe 20% of the population was slave at one time or another in their life. Who in the New Testament was a former slave? You know, we know maybe 100 Christians. Let's just throw that figure out there. About 100 Christians from our reading of the New Testament. There's only one person that we know that we can identify as a slave, and that would be Onesimus, the slave of Philemon. Are we to imagine that no other person mentioned in the New Testament was a slave? It's just that it's not something that people boast about. It's not something that people talk about. And it's the reason why Paul also in his writings, he doesn't tell anyone that he's a slave because it's not going to further his ministry. Paul says, to the Jew, I became as a Jew in order to win more. To the Gentile, I became as a Gentile in order to win more. Given that he was a former slave, if he broadcasts this and tells others of it, there's certain people that will dismiss Paul as insignificant. And there's an audience that won't listen to his gospel message if this is more broadly known. So it's not something that Paul is eager to share with others. It's not like he was hiding it. And like I say, there's several texts that I examine in the book where Paul, I think, discreetly is insinuating that he was a former slave.
Well, my guest today is Dr. Mark Fairchild. He is a retired Peters Professor of Biblical Studies from Huntington University and the author of Paul's Enslavement, The Early Life of Saul the Zealot, talking about the reasons why Paul may have been a slave in his early life and how it influenced his theology and all this sort of jazz. Given all of this, you know, these points that you've made, there were a couple things that just popped into my head as you were summarizing them that I'm curious what you think about how they maybe fit into the narrative. One that came to my mind, and I may be mistaken about this, but I seem to recall that Paul was a name given to Saul by God, like one of his, you know, this will be your name going forward sort of moments. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but maybe you can confirm or deny that for me.
No, we don't read anything of the sort. It's just said, as we read through the Acts of the Apostles, it's very discreet. Paul initially is called Saul. And then when he goes on his first missionary journey with Barnabas and John Mark, as soon as he arrives on the island of Cyprus, where he's among Greeks and Romans, now all of a sudden Luke starts calling him Paul. But there's no declaration that this was a title given by God to him. Instead, it was, in my estimation, probably the name that was given to him once he was adopted into his former master's family.
I'm also curious what you think about Paul's being a tent maker. I think he describes himself as being a tent maker.
Yes.
Either in Acts or in one of his epistles.
Yeah. Slaves that had skills of various sorts would demand a higher price on the slave markets. Many of the slaves, if they had no particular skills, just became common labor. So they would be assigned to work in the mines, which is almost like a death sentence, because, you know, life was cheap. Or they'd be assigned to agricultural pursuits out into the fields. But people who had skills, and Paul's family evidently had skills, tent-making skills, they were also very intellectual, would have a closer relationship with their owner. And, of course, the owner would utilize those skills to make a profit himself. That's probably how it is that Paul's owner, who was in all likelihood named Paul, or Paulus, Roman name, probably got to know Paul's family. They were hard workers. And so once they were freed, the owner invited Paul, his family, to become a part of his own family. They were adopted. And when did this happen? We don't know. Probably when Paul's father was granted freedom, then the rest of the family would be granted freedom as well. So was Paul a child at that time? So Paul maybe, who knows, maybe he's 8 years old, 10 years old. Maybe this happened when Paul was a young man. He was in his early teens. And then after that, of course, Paul made his way to Jerusalem. He's free now. Okay. He made his way to Jerusalem. His sister also made his way to Jerusalem. This is the only other family member we know about Paul. Paul doesn't talk about himself. Okay. He doesn't tell us anything about his mother, his father. The only detail we get is actually from Luke and the Acts of the Apostles, where we discover that Paul's sister and his nephew are in Jerusalem. So we know that there's, you know, others from Paul's family that made the transition, made that move from Tarsus to Jerusalem. And that's where Paul began studying with Gamaliel, the rabbi there, is the foremost rabbi in all of Judaism at that time. And Paul tells us that he was an extraordinary student. Paul was being groomed for leadership positions within Judaism, and he gave it all up for Christ. If you can imagine, Paul was a made man. His future was paved. He was on a golden street, but yet he recognized the truth of the gospel when Jesus Christ revealed himself on the Damascus Road.
You may have touched on this earlier, but maybe how Roman slavery may have differed from our modern understanding of slavery, if at all.
Yeah. What's interesting is that if we look at some of the demographics and what we know about slavery, you know, 2,000 years ago, 95%, at least 95% of the population was living in poverty. Now, that probably blows your mind, you know, for most people. 95% of the people living in poverty. And of that 95%, probably about 50% of that were living below subsistence, which means they were not getting enough calories to maintain life. They were not able to put food on the table for their families. It's one of the reasons why most of the ancient people were spiraling down deeper and deeper into debt. Interesting that Jesus talks an awful lot in his parables about debtors, people who have gone so deep into debt that they have no feasible way of paying off those debts. For some of those people, slavery was beneficial because as a slave, they would be clothed, they would be housed, they would be given food. So it was actually kind of an uptick in terms of their economic status. Now, again, the property, the whole issue of honor and shame, you know, they were shamed as such. For some of them, it really wasn't as bad as what we might think about slavery as we saw it here in America and see it elsewhere in the world. Slavery, as I've already mentioned, was not terminal. Some slaves could be paid a small amount of money. We've heard the expression slave wages. Some of those wages are true. They could actually earn a small amount of money. The treatment of slaves varied depending upon the slave owner. You could be harshly treated. You could be beaten. Life could be miserable. You could be killed. But for other slaves, it wasn't so bad. A lot of it depended on owner. A lot of it depended upon the skills that you brought to the table when you became a slave. And so it varied greatly. You know, and it's not always the doom and gloom that we think of a slave today. It certainly wasn't good, but from where they were starting out, they mentioned 95% of the population living in poverty, destitute poverty. And we're not talking about a government program to help you out. Okay, they didn't have welfare back in those days or anything else of that sort. Life was tough back in those days, and slavery was an entrenched institution, which everybody took for granted. Nobody back in those days, you know, challenged it, because there was no feasible way of removing slavery from society.
I can think of a couple ways that you might answer this question, but I'll put it to you. One reason that people look down on the Bible is that Paul doesn't actually seem to explicitly condemn slavery, and in a lot of ways seems to more or less say, okay, you know, he says, masters, you know, treat your slaves kindly, but he also says, slaves, like, obey your masters, things like this. Given Paul's experience, why do you think that is?
You have to live 2,000 years ago. It was impossible to remove slavery. Slavery has existed from the beginning of time. All cultures, all the way up to our modern day, have had slavery. And we're doing a lot today, of course, to undo the errors of the past. But again, if you go back 2,000 years, the Romans needed slaves to operate their plantations for agricultural purposes, mining, just the maintaining of culture and the economy. The Romans harshly put down slave revolts. You're probably familiar with Spartacus. Spartacus was a slave who rose up with many other slaves. It caused incredible damage to the Roman culture, but it didn't stop slavery. There were several slave revolts that had gone on. And Paul does not want the Christian faith to be associated with a revolution. If Christianity was associated with the removal of slavery, Christianity would have been wiped out. And Paul wants to basically say, okay, let's start out with the gospel message. That's what's primary. That's what's most important. And then once we establish a Christian culture, then let's start improving that culture by removing other elements of that culture that are inappropriate, okay, that are bad, that are wrong, that are evil. So I think it's interesting to read Paul's letter to Philemon. How does he describe Onesimus? Paul says, I'm sending my own heart to you. And Paul uses not the typical Greek word for heart, cardia, which most of your listeners are familiar with. He uses a different Greek term, splunknon, which indicates his innermost, deepest feelings. Why does Paul express it this way? It's because he knows where Onesimus is coming from. And he makes an impassioned plea to Philemon to do the right thing. And doing the right thing is releasing Onesimus from his slavery. For those people who say that Paul doesn't condemn slavery, you got to read between the lines a little bit there. Paul, when writing to the Corinthians, tells slaves, if you have the opportunity to achieve your freedom, seize the opportunity. Paul recognizes that it's an evil, recognizes that it's wrong, but his hands are tied. Nothing he says or does will ever stop the institution of slavery during the Roman period. He knows that will never happen. and he doesn't want Christianity associated with a revolution which is distracting from the primary purpose of what he's trying to share with the gospel.
Oh, that's very crafty of Paul. I think he talks about becoming, you mentioned this earlier, becoming all things to all people so that he might not be an offense, you know, or something that would prevent the gospel from, you know, going out and reaching. It's really interesting. I think, just as Christianity, I guess, overtook the Roman Empire, it seems slavery fell apart anyway, just by the gospel being planted there and growing up. I guess returning back to Paul's writings, how did this theme of his being influenced by perhaps his early experiences as a slave, how does that inform his theology, and how can it inform our theology? Like, are there mistakes we make because we maybe don't have that background?
Yeah, I think it definitely impacts his theology. He thinks of sin, for instance, when writing to the Romans. He describes sin as slavery to Satan. There's nothing we can do about it. Those are the circumstances, and that's what Paul is trying to say as well, is that slavery is a good metaphor to describe the condition in which we live. We are sinful people, and what we need to do is to die to sin, because if a slave were to die, Paul explains to the Romans, his master no longer has a claim over him. So what is Paul saying? He's saying the same thing that Jesus is trying to say, is that you need to be born again. Die to sin so that sin no longer has a claim over you, and then be born again to a new master, and that is Jesus Christ. Theologically, I think this is foundational in terms of what Paul is trying to tell us. Paul talks an awful lot about sin, our attachment to sin, and how it is that we can be released from that sin.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, retired Bible and religion professor, Dr. Mark Fairchild, author of Paul's Enslavement. Thanks for listening, and I hope you can join us again on Monday at this same time for another edition of His People.